This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSIN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections, new quarterback and head coach breakdowns, Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, plus best future bets from the VSIN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned bettor or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSIN.com/guide to get your copy of our all-new NFL betting guide today, VSIN.com/guide. We will talk AFC East today. That is our post-mortem contribution to the guide, even though it's not in writing. I gave out one bet in the guide, so
did
I feel like
really?
I did.
Nice. What'd you give out?
Coach of the Year.
Nice. We should talk about
it. We will talk about that. I think we can.
I think we should.
Our last show together today, at least.
For a while.
For a little bit of time. Yeah. We'll talk about that later.
Our long-distance relationship starts long distance back up again tomorrow. Yeah. You go back on the road. Have fun, pal.
It's going to be hard to say goodbye to you, man. Trying to mentally prepare for that already.
We'll be okay.
We'll do that by talking some Big Ten football. That'll distract us from the inevitable separation anxiety here. As we talk some Big Ten, we'll get a Ohio State breakdown in a little bit, but right now talking Michigan football. It's a fascinating season now for Michigan with the Sharon Moore coming in first year as the head coach. As we welcome in Anthony Broom on our progressive guest line, covers Michigan for thewolverine.com and on3.com. You follow him at Anthony T. Broom. Anthony, thanks so much for giving us a few minutes here. It's interesting just from the betting perspective that in general, people souring on what Michigan will be in 2024, where the win total was 9.5. That's been bet down to 9, and that 9 is juiced under here. What do you make of the, you know, some of that pessimism here from the general betting public on a team that has a whole lot of transition and question marks, especially in offense this year?
Yeah, I think there are two things. I mean, first and foremost, it's the schedule, right? Like, you have Texas in week 2. You're going to play USC. They'll go play at Washington. They play Oregon. They play Ohio State. So right there, I mean, you're looking at a scenario where it's kind of an uphill battle to get, you know, more than 9 wins, I think, for them. Now, I think they have the goods to do it. But, you know, if we're looking for reasons why maybe that's been bet down or why the public isn't super high on them, I think it's the quarterback situation. You know, if there was something a little more ready-made at the position right now, I think there would be some confidence with the defense that they have coming back and some of the other pieces they have on offense to where it could be a team that makes a run at 10-plus wins. But, you know, the fact that we're here as of, you know, July 11th, and it's really just kind of been a bit stagnant in terms of quarterback news, quarterback buzz, hype. And I know it, like, spring ball was a couple months ago, so you can't really sort out a lot of those storylines. But, you know, I think if you're a Michigan fan or someone who's a Michigan bettor, you'd like to hear a little bit more about, you know, a little more confidence about what they have at quarterback. So to me, I think that that is probably the biggest reason why that, you know, there's this kind of down sort of vibe with them in terms of a betting perspective at the moment.
Alex Origi is the top guy in the depth chart right now. Of course, Jack Tuttle, a couple other names that you might be aware of. I think he played at Indiana for a while. He's a graduate transfer, Davis Warren. So tell me what you think about the quarterback room. Grade which guy you think is going to be the starter coming in, and if there's some upside that he can take the job and run with it.
Yeah, I think, you know, Alex Origi is probably the guy that has the most upside just because of, you know, the skill set. He's got a big arm. He can run the football. I think in an ideal world, he kind of breaks out for Michigan and becomes what, you know, Jalen Milroe was for Alabama last year. But, you know, that's the rosiest outcome. You know, the other would be that he's not much of a threat to throw at all, and that he comes in as one of those change of pace type of gadget quarterbacks, which would probably turn things over to Jack Tuttle, who, you know, at this point, it's his 7th year in college. A lot of people go to college for 7 years. Most of them are doctors and lawyers.
But Tommy Boy reference. Love that.
Right. But, yeah, I mean, he's got a shot. He was the number, if you just project up what the depth chart was last year, he was the number 2 quarterback. So maybe that puts him in the driver's seat. You know, he didn't do a ton in spring ball because of an injury, but that's, you know, Davis Warren is kind of lingering there too, but really I think the bulk of the conversation has revolved around Tuttle and Orgy. And I think if I had to pick a guy right now, just based on what we've heard, it's probably Jack Tuttle.
Step aside, Cam Rising is basically the message
from Jack Tuttle this year.
Anthony Broom joining us here on our Progressive Guest Line, talking to Michigan football. Does a great job covering the team for TheWolverine.com on 3.com as well. While the offense will get all the question marks, and rightly so, Anthony, you look at the defensive side. I think it's fascinating to project what a defense led by a great NFL mind historically in Wink Martindale could look like at DC, and is likely going to be the unit that would lead to the most success. What have been the early returns from what you've heard around the team of a guy who has built his bones at the defensive level on the NFL side of things, now coming over here and taking over this defense at Michigan?
Yeah, you know, the bones of what they are defensively will more or less stay the same. You know, they went to the Baltimore Ravens style of defense under Mike Macdonald, under Jesse Minter, and you know, Wink is kind of, in a way, you know, the godfather of that system. Now, for them, it's going to mean probably some more blitzing, some more man coverages. But it seems like it's been, I can't say seamless because there's different terminology and different things. But, you know, I think the big reason that Schoenmoor went out and hired Wink in the first place is that he wanted to keep this system as similar as he possibly could, given the talent they have coming back. I mean, as good as Michigan's defense was last year, probably even, I won't say more talented as a unit, but certainly a lot more top heavy. You know, you see Mason Graham in the top five of these mock drafts. You see Will Johnson in the top five of these mock drafts. Kenneth Grant, another defensive tackle, is kind of right outside the first round in a lot of those projections too. So they've got a lot of talent there. And when you have, you know, a defense full of NFL players coordinated by, you know, essentially an NFL defensive coordinator, I think that means good things for them. I think that they will kind of be able to take the baton from last year's team and keep the train rolling, so to speak. So I'm excited to watch it. Now, you don't want them to turn into, you know, the Iowa defense where now your defense has to be your offense. But I certainly think that defense is going to give them, you know, even with the schedule they have, it's going to give them a shot to win just about every single game they play.
Plus 115 to make the playoff. I think 9 wins in the Big Ten, Anthony, might get you in this year, at least as a Penn State alum. That's what I'm hoping for because that team has never seen the playoff. Of course, Michigan has seen the playoff multiple times. So that means if you flip a coin 100 times, if you feel like on 50 sides of the coin, it's coming up playoff for Michigan, you're making a pretty decent bet there, plus 115. What do you think about that?
I could see it. Now, the key is, you know, There's a little more nuance to it than that, in that, you know, it depends on what 9-3 looks like. Like if you go 9-3, but, you know, Oregon and Ohio State, you know, blow the barn doors off of you and you lose a game you're not supposed to, you know, it's going to depend on what that looks like. But let's just say every single game that they play in is competitive, which it has a chance to be. I think it's a real good chance that that's what happens. I do think 9-3 could do it. You know, that's the grace that a 12-team playoff gives you now. Maybe if that was the case 10 years ago, Jim Harbaugh would have made a few more college football playoffs. But, this is – I think it bodes well for the Big Ten. I think the way that things are set up, particularly with how top-heavy the Big Ten feels this year, you know, certainly with that top 4 or 5 teams, I think that you could see a scenario where 3 or 4 Big Ten teams make a push for that playoff.
And the make-miss right now, plus 115 to make, minus 145 to miss. You're much better off just betting an under on the win total instead of the miss price based on how that is set up. Anthony, last thing for me, just from a personnel standpoint, we go back to the offense here where you're replacing the entire offensive line this year. It is an offense we expect to be predicated on the ground game. What have you heard early on what the expectations are and who has been impressive so far in camp with that offensive line completely being retooled?
Yeah, I think they feel pretty at ease with what their offensive line is. You know, in a lot of other scenarios, and maybe even in this scenario, it's too early to tell to a certain extent, but, you know, anytime, like last year's team, you have guys like Zach Sinner that come back and run it back for an extra year when they otherwise probably wouldn't. Same thing with Trevor Keegan. So you've got guys that maybe could have started on last year's team that just had to wait that extra year or so. Giovanni Elhadi, a guard that certainly fits that mold. Greg Crippen at center could fit that mold. So to me, I think that they feel good about what they have there. So we'll see. I mean, it's going to be a little bit of a drop off whenever you have a unit that's good, that is that good. But I think that they have the goods to kind of stay in the mix there.
All I know is a lot of bettors we've talked to here throughout this run-up, they're like, if that thing drops to 8.5 and there's enough of a swell, that's a great kind of a zag bet to go back on
a
the over because nine and three does make a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Anthony Broom giving us some great insights here on the state of the Michigan Wolverine football program heading into 2024. You follow him at Anthony T. Broom. Always great to have him on the program here. Writes for thewolverine.com and on3.com. Thanks for the time, sir. Going to be quite the ride there this year in the new look Big Ten.
All right. Thank you for having me.
No doubt. We're underway here in our latest day baseball game, by the way, Jared. And come on.
Jordan Hicks.
Give us a little
imploded.
Bit more. Jordan Hicks. Three
absolutely
runs.
Absolutely imploded. Four. Oh, no. It was a sack fly. No one on. So, yeah. A solo home run. Two singles. It was a disaster.
We'll reset on the other side. Paul Skeens with a no-hitter into the seventh. We'll update you there. Start our AFC East previews after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You should go to VSIN.com right now to take a look at all of our best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by states, betting tools, and betting guides. Adam Burke, our managing editor of the website, VSIN.com, has the rest of his Thursday MLB plays up and available right now. We also have breakdowns on the Wimbledon men's semifinals. We're going to talk about that a little bit later in the show with Zach Cohen, who's breaking down Daniil Medvedev versus Carlos Alcaraz, as well as Lorenzo Musetti and Novak Djokovic for tomorrow. It's optimized for mobile. It's a fresh new look. Check it out, VSIN.com. Back here from the home of the best betting game in Las Vegas, Sigma Derby. Bar Canada at the D.
People are going bananas today.
Jared
this is the
Smith.
First day it's back since we've been here.
It's back. Sigma Derby had its own all-star
it's
break.
It's packed. Look, and, check out this thing right now. Go check that camera.
Yeah, there's a lot going on.
There's as many people in the entire casino as there are playing that game right now. It's crazy.
I once on a bachelor party ended up spending 4 hours at a Sigma Derby machine. And it was so captivating. It was so captivating.
Yeah, yeah. What's more captivating, Paul Skeens or Sigma Derby?
I think, well, also, it was one of those weekends that it was so busy. It was around March. I think it was a weekend of March Madness and a Taylor Swift concert in Vegas. And, I mean, it was like Fremont was just swimming. So, you think of a big group of guys, you're like, oh, let's all take over a craps table. It's like, yeah, that's not going to happen when it's so busy. So, we found the next best thing, which was take over a Sigma Derby table. And had a great time.
I think Sigma Derby is...
Did I shake it off? No, I did not.
Okay.
It's a young group that I like. So, let's be honest. The downtown can get a very eclectic mix of demographics. Usually, this casino skews a little bit older. This is all younger peeps here hanging out. So they probably weren't even alive when this game was made, which is ironic.
I mean, but I was not alive.
I don't know if I was.
You know, I mean, this is
1986.
It was eight. Wasn't it 80? Yeah, you said 86. Why?
So it was made the year I was born, and I'm pushing 40.
Maybe 85.
It came out 1985.
I was not born when this game was created.
They don't rip the young people.
I guess technically I'm one of them in this scenario. Compared to Sigma Derby, I'm a baby.
You are, yes, you're a minnow in that regard. What a great game. What a great game.
Awesome stuff.
A lot of people were not, were also not born yet when Aaron Rodgers was at least ascending the high school ranks and eventually the Chino Community, Butte Community College ranks and then Chino, California. And now here he is, Aaron Rodgers. He's still in the league. And his team, the New York Jets, this year, super polarizing. We're going to get to them in a second. We wanted to close out first, though, the Miami Dolphins talk with the numbers you pulled up, Jared. We were talking Tua under pressure versus not under pressure based on how his offensive line perceived to have such a wide range of outcomes this year. What are those numbers spitting out?
Well, another pro tip, Pro Football Focus, I think, is worth. I have many subscriptions. Actually, this is one that someone else pays for through an old job, but I have many. I have many.
I'll give you my Netflix.
I have many subscriptions to many different data service websites that if you do what we do every day, I think they're better talking points, but sometimes you find nuggets that are actionable. This isn't necessarily one of those nuggets. This is more of a talking point nugget. But again, it speaks to the importance of the offensive line for the Dolphins. When Tua was kept clean last year, 75% of his dropbacks, he was kept clean last year. 28 touchdowns, 12 picks. He had a 94 Pro Football Focus rating, which is elite. 27 big-time throws, which is significant. and a 3% turnover worthy play rate. Very good. Almost 9 yards per attempt. Under pressure, a quarter of his dropbacks last year, a little over 100 of his dropbacks last year were under duress. 5.3 yards per attempt, so almost half what it is kept clean. 2 touchdowns, 3 picks, a 51 pro football focus rating, nearly half his pro football focus rating under pressure compared to being kept clean. A turnover-worthy play rate of 4%, so up about a full percent from what it is when he is under...
All valuable context.
Very valuable context.
It's funny, too, because as we transition into the Jets, while Aaron Rodgers has always been tremendous with or without pressure, I find it fascinating and a little bit hard to totally get all the way there on as one small element of this hype train that is the New York Jets, who are 9.5 on a win total, heavy juice to the over, minus 150, is the fact that this is one of the worst offensive line situations in football last year. It was not talked about because after Aaron Rodgers had his Achilles injury on the fourth snap from scrimmage in week one, all that was talked about was just the abysmal play at quarterback, but this was as bad as it got as far as offensive line situations last year. Yet, when you look at some of these early season positional rankings, PFF, Jets, fifth best O-line in their rankings. Sharp Football, tied for sixth this year, with the big ad being, you know, Tyron Smith coming over as a veteran tackle. You bring in Morgan Moses as well. Elijah Vera Tucker, very solid interior guard for you. But just like last year when the Jets had optimism, and yet you're talking Dwayne Brown on the outside. You're talking about elder statesmen. Can you hold up in a very, very difficult division for the 17-game season all the way into January and make a postseason run? I find myself skeptical that we have to see it a little bit more before we say the Jets are this top five unanimous offensive line when they were so, so bad last year. And just because Rodgers is back and healthy does not automatically equate to success on that O-line.
I agree with your sentiment, but I think you have to be optimistic because they poured more resources into the O-line than maybe any other team did. Not only did they bring in two guys, I don't want to say off the scrap heap. I mean, Terrence Smith had a really good career. I think it's just the injuries and the durability with him that's the concern. Moses on the other side, I would say, is a journeyman. But then you draft a guy that you hope could be one of the tackles of the future, and Olufoshano out of Penn State, who I think coming in, I think it was the hand size that was the knock. I don't know. I know there was like a knock on him coming into the draft that is the reason why he was going to fall, but I had a chance to watch him very closely at Penn State. This guy has been talked about for years as a top offensive lineman prospect. I would say the last 2 years, we've just been waiting for him to kind of blossom into that role. And I think, I want to say he was a junior that came out a year early. So he's a young guy and he has a chance to improve. Maybe he doesn't have to start week one. Maybe it's Moses and Smith on the outside. And then you have an ace in the hole, a guy that you can bring along slowly with two veterans. And again, I think if you talk about the men, we talk about this all the time at the quarterback situation. You want a rookie quarterback to have a mentor, even if he's not the starting mentor, even if he's just the backup and he's a mentor and can groom the starting quarterback, because there's a lot that goes on between the ears there. I think the same could be said about any other position in the NFL, especially a left tackle situation, which is like the most important position besides quarterback, I think, on the offense to groom Fashanu. Well, I would say Terrence Smith is one of the best players. They had a ton of experience, played in Dallas for a number of years in front of a really good offensive line around him. So I think the situation is immensely better. Does that mean results? Does that mean they finish the year top 10 in, you know, pass rush, you know, or pass blocking, win rate, run block, all those win rate stats that we look at now? Maybe. But I think you have to be optimistic based off of the moves that they made.
And that's fair. I always look at when you're talking O-lines that invested a lot, right? And Cincinnati's a great example of this from a couple of years ago. They finally said, okay, we cannot let Joe Burrow lead the league in sacks. So they spent a ton of money, brought in some really good, stout offensive linemen. It took some time. It took till about week 7, week 8 for that.
Sure.
That's a relationship to really gel. Well, what's the issue here for the Jets and why I'm a little bit pessimistic, at least to the point of, you know, I'm not going to be laying $1.50 on them to go over. To me, that has been priced to a point where it's ridiculous and the tax is out of control at this point. You've got an unprecedented 6 primetime games the first 11 weeks plus a London trip. I mean, scheduling is just miserable. It's by far the worst, you know, rest edge of any team in the NFL. It's criminal what the NFL has done here to the Jets. At the same time, I'm sure the NFL is going, hey, we got robbed all this money of primetime games thanks to Rodgers' injury. So we're going to try to recoup that and then some right away. But that is not an easy way to start your year when you are trying to get so many pieces acclimated and ready to go early on. And if this was a softer opening, Jared, to schedule, I would feel a little bit more confident. And okay, you can work out some things while you get your offensive line all set, but I mean, this is tough. You go to San Francisco right out of the gate, I mean, a back-to-back road games to start, short week at Tennessee. You get a short week, you know, even though it's New England, it's your first home game comes on a short week after you've had back-to-back road games. It's just not an optimal setup. And that's why you probably want to look at alternative ways to bet this for the Jets in 2024, as opposed to a win total that is really taxed based on the hype through the moon when, you know, the schedule certainly does not indicate that. And while you are right, Jared, there's a lot of reason to be optimistic. So many great skill position players. And ultimately, this is a team that should be right there competing for a playoff and a divisional championship this year. It's going to take time. And to invest preseason when you don't know anything yet, to me, is a little bit putting the cart before the horse.
I wouldn't invest preseason at these prices. That's for sure. Yeah. I'll tell you something I am intrigued in. And our pal Will Hill gave me this bet. I want to say it was 2 weeks ago. Maybe it was a week ago. And the more I look at it, the more I like it, because I do think they're live week one. That's as fresh as they're going to be. I know the Niners are good, but let's be honest. That's a winnable game for the Jets if they play at their best level, especially because of the unknowns of the first week of the season. I think dogs are always more live week one anyways. But then you look at the rest of that little stretch there, and I could let's live in a world for a minute that they win that game in San Francisco. I could absolutely see them starting 5-6-0. You get the Bills at home in that week six game in prime time. They're 18-1 to be the last undefeated team. You knock the Niners out right out of the gate with that week one game. You got the Lions that still have a very soft schedule early. But if we're trying to find creative ways to invent value with a number that's already been bet to high heaven,
sure,
you gotta get a little creative here.
I'm with you. Well, and look, it's talking about looking at the extremes, right, on the variance. What is a logical outcome to the good and to the bad? And we've kind of broken down those two outcomes. It's very, very real for the Jets in 2024. When we come back, we'll continue some more AFC East preview thoughts by going to the Buffalo Bills right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
It is our final hour of Sharp Money here on VSiN, live from downtown Las Vegas, Bar Canada at the D. I'm Ben Wilson, Wyatt Tomchick, our producer, Jared Smith is here. Got some day baseball going on, and in this final hour, we will break down the rest of the baseball card for your Thursday. Also talk Wimbledon semifinals going on early tomorrow on the men's side. I do have a nice, I have an underdog bet, Jared.
I'll be honest, I'm waiting for you to feed me a winner. Now, I didn't feed our audience a winner today with a Nerfie. I'm waiting for you to feed me a tennis winner. I'm hungry.
You're hungry. All right. Hungry. Well, just stay, you know, stay vigilant for the next like four segments. We're going to talk a lot of Big Ten football, though, this hour, as our college football betting guide will be coming out in the not too distant future here at VSiN. And we'll talk to Aaron Halterman in a half hour. He has a bunch of win total bets he really likes as far as the Big Ten. And we'll start things off by talking a team that is at the top of the Big Ten food chain, at least on the odds board right now. As we go out to our progressive guest line, please do welcome in Andy Backstrom, Ohio State beat writer for On3.com and Letterman Row. You follow him at Andy Backstrom. And Andy, we start on a year and a team here that is so not necessarily polarizing, but from a head coach perspective, it's rare you see a team with these sorts of expectations, but a coach that is in such a make or break year. As we start with that angle, what have been the kind of the early vibes and feels around a team as they prepare for camp in Ohio State that has so much at stake here in this first season of a new look Big Ten?
Yeah, really, it's national championship or bust. And I think they're embracing that. The players kind of know the situation. First of all, you have to beat Michigan, who they have not beaten in 3 years. That's the first time Michigan has a streak like that since 1995 to 1997. So that's goal number one. But then after that, you got to win the Big Ten title, which they haven't done since 2020. And then, of course, win the national championship, which they haven't done since 2014. So we're pushing a decade now without an Ohio State national championship. And after Michigan won it all last year, there's a lot of pressure on Ryan Day to get it done in 2024.
Andy, I think when I look at the markets, I always like to compare the Heisman market to the futures market, because to me, these are, you know, very correlated things. Will Howard's actually a pretty lofty favorite. One of the top guys on the board to win Heisman this year. He's the fourth favorite behind Ewers, Gabriel and Carson Beck. And Ohio State, the second favorite to win the national title. So if you think Ohio State is going to have a successful season, maybe it makes sense to put a little bit on Howard to win the Heisman Trophy. What is your analysis of Will Howard coming in? New quarterback, new system, obviously very experienced, but how quickly does he pick things up? And do you think the Buckeyes' success squarely tied this season to how good Will Howard is under center?
Yeah, well, technically it's still a quarterback competition. Ryan Day will never really name a starting quarterback until pretty much the last week of August. So technically he's still in a competition with Devin Brown right now. And even someone like Julian Sayin, who's the freshman that transferred in from Alabama, but Will Howard's the front runner. He came in from Kansas State, as you said, a lot of experience, 27 career starts, 33 total touchdowns last year. He's a dual threat guy. He's got a Big 12 title under his belt. And I think, you know, for Ohio State fans, they're excited about the prospect of a quarterback that can run the football again. Kyle McCord, not the most mobile guy last year as a starter, year before that, and the year before that, after that, was C.J. Stroud, who, again, more of the pocket passer. So Ohio State fans are excited to see more of that, like, J.T. Barrett-type mold for maybe Will Howard, and they're excited about the speed that he can bring as a runner and the arm that he has as a passer. The big thing for him is just limiting turnovers. He had 14 turnover-worthy plays last year at Kansas State, according to PFF. He's got better options now. He can't be forcing things like he had to do at Kansas State.
Ended up with those 10 INTs last year, Will Howard, as we're talking Ohio State football with Andy Backstrom, joins us here on our Progressive Guest Line. I think the big word that has kind of coincided with the question on new offensive coordinator Chip Kelly, Andy, it's fit. And what is that going to look like? Fit as well as scheme here. What do you most intently expect to see in this offense now that you have a guy in Chip Kelly who no longer has to worry about recruiting and speaking at dinners to boosters, something he obviously did not like to do and was not happy doing at UCLA. Now he gets to go to a place where he can just focus on the play calling there in 2024. How should we expect that to all play out there with Kelly coming in?
They really should be a better team at running the football, and that's something that's been an issue for Ohio State, especially in short yardage situations, but really overall, they haven't been able to crack the top 30 in rushing offense really since that 2020 season. So they're going to look for improvement there, probably different personnel packages, a lot of 12 personnel, 13 personnel, getting creative with the tight ends and the formations there with Chip Kelly. As we know, he's an innovator in that category. Plus, you got Travion Henderson and Quinshon Judkins, who comes from Ole Miss. Those are two 1,000-yard rushers that have the potential to both have 1,000 yards this year if things get clicking for Ohio State. So I'd say, yeah, look for the running game to get going, especially Will Howard, too, as I mentioned, as a dual-threat quarterback. You know, people have always been hammering the overs on the passing stats for Ohio State for a while now with Ryan Day. But with Chip Kelly in the fold, you know, I'd look at that running game real hard.
And that's a great way to look at it because, you know, we kind of formulate our opinions on these teams and those opinions carry over from one year to the next, especially the way that the markets are kind of baked. Will Howard being a Heisman Trophy candidate, but then you look at the group of receivers he's throwing to, it's pretty limited, frankly, compared to last year at least. Marvin Harrison Jr. is gone. Julian Fleming transferred to Penn State. Kate Stover, the great tight end, also gone. I know there's going to be a reload there, but your point is well taken. Judkins, he was a Heisman Trophy candidate last year, and of course we know how good the rest of the backfield is. So you put all of that together, and it might be a very different-looking Ohio State offense this year. Is that a positive or a negative? I mean, I know the way the Big Ten's played, it's a ground and pound conference. Sure, why not? But you got to be able to throw the ball down the field. Are you concerned that maybe too much will be run heavy and the high flying nature of the receiver group maybe not as high flying this season?
I wouldn't say I'm concerned about it. I mean, balance is always a huge thing for offenses. If Ryan Day had his way, they'd throw for 300 every game and run for 200 every game. Of course, that's not ideal, but that's kind of the goal at Ohio State right now. So they want more balance. They haven't quite had that with the run game the last few years. So if it tips, you know, a little bit more, 55-45 with the run game, I think they'd be okay with that. As far as the receivers, though, someone to definitely just have on your radar is Jeremiah Smith. I think I just saw that EA already rated him as an 84 overall freshman. This guy is the top overall player in last year's recruiting class. He's someone that's going to be a star right away. I wouldn't be surprised if he is, you know, touching the 1,000-yard mark as a receiver, as a true freshman, which is a big deal at Ohio State. So someone to have on your radar. Emeka Ogbuka, of course, is back. He's a first-round talent. Then you got other guys like Carnell Tate and Brandon Innes, who are highly touted from the previous class in 2023, and they could make, you know, kind of a breakout year this season as well. So they have guys, like you said, they're just reloading every year. That's what Brian Hartline does. I expect them to be pretty balanced this year.
He is. Andy Backstrom joining us right now to talk some Ohio State football from On3.com, Letterman Row. And I look at the win total in particular, Andy, outside of all these other odds where, you know, Ohio State vastly favored to even make the playoff, minus 650, plus 155 to win the Big Ten title game, 4-1 to win it all this year. But the win total is more fascinating just because it's 10.5, heavy juice to the over here at minus 140. Ohio State will be significantly favored in 10 of their 12 games. The only two they will not be, at Oregon, which is about a pick Beckham, and then at Penn State in what is expected to be the whiteout game there on November the 2nd. When you break down those two matchups specifically, because for us as bettors, that's kind of what we're trying to break down if we're thinking if it's worth a play here on Ohio State's win total. What do you make of how those matchups are going to look like, as much as it's weird to always project forward? But you know, realistically, those are really the two big games that'll make or break this regular season outside of the obvious Michigan rivalry at the end of the season.
Yeah, I think the Oregon game for me is the one that comes up the most as far as concern for Ohio State. You know, October 12th, it's right before a bye week. It's a pivotal matchup. And I wonder, too, for this quarterback situation, if Will Howard is a starter and doesn't play well in that game, they lose that. What does that look like after that? With the bye week, they make a change. Again, there's a lot of pressure here. So that's a game that really, for me, goes 50-50 with Oregon. Oregon has the advantage, of course, being at home. They restocked with the transfer portal. They've got a great passing offense, Dylan Gabriel there, a fleet of wide receivers that are going to challenge this really vaunted secondary for Ohio State. The Penn State game scares me a little bit less if you're an Ohio State fan, just because Ohio State's had Penn State's number really since that 2016 season, home or away. Ohio State just finds a way to kind of pull it out against James Franklin. And until we see otherwise, I don't think that one scares me as much as maybe the Oregon game on October 12th.
I would push back as an alum of Penn State, Andy, but I can't because I've watched it all play out in real time, daggers to my heart. Speaking of daggers, we haven't talked about the defense yet for Ohio State, and I think to me, Jim Knowles might be the most underappreciated coordinator in the country. I mean, I won't push back there too much because he does get a lot of love, but this is a very talented group. This is a group that was second in the country last year in points allowed per game. Michigan was the only defense that was better. Walk me through. I expect them to be elite again this year, but are there any personnel gaps that maybe we should be aware of?
The really only big changes are at linebacker. You know, they lost Steel Chambers and Tommy Eichenberg, who are now trying to make their name in the NFL. And, you know, so they got replacements there, but they might be even more dynamic at that position. Sonny Styles played safety last year. He's moved up to linebacker. Really good athlete, along with CJ Hicks, who's another guy from that class in 2022. Super good athlete, dynamic, fast, good pass rusher. So they'll be at linebacker along with Cody Simon, who's a veteran, more of that middle linebacker mold. And then the secondary is really maybe the most exciting part of this defense. You got, you know, cornerback and Denzel Burke, who broke out last year. Davis Nigmanosen is one of the best run defending corners in the Big Ten. Jordan Hancock's a great nickel. And then, of course, the defensive line, JT Tuimolo, Jack Sawyer, both back at defensive end. And the interior guys, they're pretty good too.
He is Andy Backstrom joining us here, Ohio State beat writer for On3.com and Letterman Row. Give him a follow at Andy Backstrom. Really good stuff, man. Really appreciate the insight here coming on. And it's going to be a fascinating year for sure in the Big Ten, especially with Ohio State. All those expectations. We look forward to checking in with you again here as the season gets underway.
Absolutely. Thanks for having me on, guys. Appreciate it.
Week one, August 31st for Ohio State against Akron. How many points will they be laying? It will be a lot.
I was going to say, as many days that there are until the college football season starts, that's about how many points they're going to be.
That's probably fair.
In the 50 range, maybe. I don't know, 40-something.
Akron, Western Michigan, Marshall, not exactly murderer's row of a non-con there for Ohio State.
Here's the thing about their schedule, if you guys want to put it up on the screen again. The road trips aren't that bad. They only have to go west once.
East Lansing?
Yeah, and you know, you're not going too far for East Lansing. I know Penn State's tough, but let's be honest.
Northwestern stadium renovations this year?
Not exactly. They're basically leaving the time zone once. It is not a difficult schedule, despite the fact that you have all these new teams coming in.
It's not horrible. We'll get some more Big Ten win total thoughts coming up from Aaron Halterman from RacingDudes.com in about 20 minutes. Up next, we will close out our discussion on the AFC East this year as we break down all four teams. It's the Buffalo Bills we'll discuss right after this.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Right now, if you go to VSiN.com, all of our best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state betting tools, and betting guides are available, optimized for mobile. It's a great opportunity. Great time right now, this time of year, because we have MLB best bets from Adam Burke rest of the day today, Wimbledon best bets for tomorrow from our Zach Cohen, and Mike Somich, who knows a thing or two about horse racing, Saratoga. Opening day best bets now for the rest of the card there. As we've got a couple more segments, we'll break down Wimbledon semis here to close out the show, get some final thoughts on the MLB card from Jared. It's been a big Bumpus Jones day today. Say that
time. We got another
five
one in.
Fast.
We
big
have
Bumpus
broken
Jones
the record.
Day.
The record is in the rearview mirror. We're going to get a trophy next week. The most times Bumpus Jones has ever been mentioned in a three-hour radio show.
Yes, it will be. And that was all because of Paul Skenes.
Bet the over.
Seven-inning no-hitter today. Bumpus Jones, first ever a player to throw a no-hitter as a rookie in MLB. It happened to be his first start. It happened to be his only start.
And a 55-foot mound.
On a 55-foot mound. Yes, Paul Skenes, by the way, the aside to that, tied for the fewest starts in Major League history before making an appearance at the All-Star game, assuming he does pitch in some capacity.
I think today he locked up the start.
11 starts. Anyway, we'll talk about some baseball here to wrap up the show in a little bit. Right now, Big Ten football, that's been a big topic of conversation today on the show. We've had some great guests as well to break down Michigan football, Ohio State football, and to talk about some overarching win total themes. It's great to have Aaron Halterman back on, as always, here on Sharp Money as we go out to our progressive guest line from RacingDudes.com. Great to see Aaron. And it's funny, we'll just start with Ohio State, Aaron, because we were talking about that with one of their really good beat writers, Andy Backstrom, here earlier on this hour. It's weird. I think on the surface, we'd think it's a little bit tepid to go over a team 10.5 when they're already juiced to the over. But what say you on a team that does have a pretty soft schedule outside of two tough road games at Oregon and at Penn State this year?
Yeah, I've been watching you guys. That was a good guess there on the Ohio State situation. And look, I think when you look at this team, if you look at from the outside looking in, and somebody who's not an Ohio State fan, but just looking from a gambling perspective, it is kind of, okay, can Will Howard be that guy for Ohio State? And he doesn't have to be amazing. He just has to be okay. I mean, we saw it with Kyle McCord last year. Can you just be okay? Can you just be an adequate quarterback, not turn over the ball? And if you can, you're going to have success. Because the thing with Ohio State and the thing we know, guys, they're loaded everywhere else. So this team is absolutely loaded. And you mentioned it. The schedule isn't too bad. You do have to go to Oregon. That's going to be tricky. You have to go to Penn State. But I think that's a game they should win. And then the big thing for me, Michigan, I don't think Michigan is going to fall that much, but they've got to fall some with all the losses they've had, including the coaching staff. But obviously, not just that. I mean, they've lost a lot of great players from that team. I think they slipped just a bit. Ohio State was close last year. I think they get them in the horseshoe. They're ready for it this year. So, yeah, I'm kicking it off. I'm really confident in Ohio State. I'm going over 10.5.
I agree with you, Aaron. Again, that game at Oregon, I know it's tough, but they have a bye week after that. And Penn State, they've owned them recently. I just don't see two losses on this schedule. So to me, over 10.5 wins makes a ton of sense. We'll get to Wisconsin in a minute because you think the Badgers might have a sneaky good year too. But let's pivot to the newcomers because I think the biggest question of a lot of people have, including me, a Big Ten alum, Penn State guy, how are the new blood going to adapt to this league? How are the West Coast teams now having to travel east? How are the East Coast teams, or I guess Midwest teams, traveling west? How are these things going to impact what has been a relatively stable conference for the last couple of decades or so? So it's mostly a regional thing right on the East Coast. The only additions were Maryland and Rutgers kind of since Penn State. So we've seen now the expansion west, and you don't think the Bruins and the Trojans are going to fare too well.
Yeah, those are the two teams that I think are going to struggle the most that are a little bit more of the high-profile teams. I mean, you look at Oregon, I think they're going to be okay. Washington will probably reload, maybe not this year, but they'll be okay. I'm looking at UCLA and USC, and I'm thinking you better get a lot better really quickly. I'll start with UCLA. Going under 5.5, I do realize, look, that's, you know, hey, if they could go 6-6, you lose the bet. But I don't have a lot of confidence in what the recruiting classes have been the last couple of years here at UCLA. And honestly, last year, when you look at that team, and even the year before, the defense really won them a lot of games. They were very solid. That defense is kind of depleted this year. So with UCLA, I'm a little bit worried. You also have a tough non-conference game as well against LSU. That's not going to be easy whatsoever. And then you got Oregon coming in there. You got to go to Penn State. You got to go to Nebraska, which I think will be a little more of a trickier game this year. You got to go to Washington and, of course, USC there at home as well. So it's a lot of tough games, I think, for UCLA. I think this is kind of a rebuilding year for them. Let's kick it to USC because I'm also going under 7.5 with USC as well. Guys, this was a nightmare last year. There's no way around it. Yeah, you did have Caleb Williams, and everything that happened with him is great in the first round, or, you know, the first pick in the draft and all this stuff. Guess what? They weren't any good last year, and now they have to replace him. Sure, they got 9 guys back on defense, but I don't have a lot of confidence that this defense is really going to have a big turnaround. And the one thing that I really want to point out, and I'm not going to dog on Lincoln Riley because I do think he is a great offensive mind, but this guy's had a lot of great quarterbacks over the years when he's put up those numbers. When you look at when he had just an let's just say, an above average quarterback in Spencer Rattler at Oklahoma, that offense fell off. It was not what it was at one time. So, you know, we have Baker Mayfield and you've got Kyler Murray, and then you had Caleb Williams here at USC. You had Jalen Hurts for a year at Oklahoma. Pro prospects, pro players. I mean, yeah, your offense is going to be great. That dropped off significantly when Rattler was the quarterback there for a year and a half. So I don't just automatically assume this USC offense is going to be unbelievable. And I think if it regresses and it's just, like, let's say good, they're in a lot of trouble. And I think under 7.5 is the play for USC as well.
And that game week one right here in Vegas, Allegiant Stadium, LSU, a 6-point favorite there in that neutral site showdown. Also one of the biggest week one. This is actually a week zero move, but it seems like everybody in the world, guys, is going to be on Hawaii just to throw out that potential narrative spot at UCLA. Talk about a long road trip, too, to start your year. That's been bet down like 4 points. I mean, Hawaii's down to plus 13 there against UCLA week zero. So, I'm with you. UCLA, 5.5. I wonder, Aaron, by the time we get to, you know, late August, if that win total doesn't get down to 5 across the board, if not some 4.5, because it seems like that is the spot and the side that every respected bettor we've talked to is on for the most part.
Yeah, it's one of those situations, guys. The more you dive into what UCLA was, they really lost a lot. Yeah. And honestly, Chip Kelly, he didn't recruit very well his last couple of seasons there. I think that's why he left, to be quite honest with you. He had a little pressure as well, but you look at that roster, it's like, I don't know, guys. I could really see them slipping.
Sure thing. As far as the one other win total that we'll talk about here, Wisconsin Badgers. Predictably, when you bring in a new coach, Luke Fickell, there were those ups and downs that is traditional and something that comes along with the first year in a program here. But what do you see now in the Badgers? Year number 2 under Fickell after they had all sorts of issues trying to find consistency at QB a season ago.
Yeah, last year was a little bit of a disaster under Luke Fickell. I think a lot of us thought we would see that immediate jump up from them. And they started off okay first couple games, and then it really fell apart. When you really examine what happened last year with Wisconsin, it was a lot of injuries and a lot of injuries in key spots that they just could not lose guys. And they weren't quite deep enough in that first year either. And then it kind of just unraveled. This year under year 2, I think they're going to be a lot better. When you think of Luke Fickell teams, you think of discipline, you think of toughness, you think of a really stingy defense. I think they're progressing towards that in year 2. I think they'll get a little bit more consistency offensively as long as they stay healthy. They did bring in a lot of guys from the transfer portal, but to try to bolster that offense a little bit as well. I think the only problem is now that their total is only 6.5. That's great. I mean, that's a 7-5 season. You're going to cash this. They did that last year. Now, the flip side and the thing that does worry you, their schedule is much tougher. I think if they had last year's schedule, there's no question they're going to have a much better year. This year, it is going to be a little bit tougher to get to that 7 win total. They've got Alabama in the non-conference. That game is at home, but it's still, that's going to be very tough. They got to go to USC. Big game for both those schools, right? To see who can get it done there. They also got to go to Iowa. They got to go to Nebraska. They've got home game against Oregon and against Penn State. Like, none of these games are an absolute loss, but all of them are like, man, they better play well or they're going to get beat in these games. So those are the swing games. I'm betting on they get a couple of them. I think they can get to like that 8-4 range. I think they'll be better in year 2 under Fickell.
So who wins the Big Ten this year? Is it simple as Ohio State's better than everyone else? Can my Nittany Lions surprise with Drew Aller? I mean, it just feels like the Big Ten is more wide open than it's been in years past because of all the newcomers, but I wouldn't be shocked if it's the Buckeyes at the end of the rainbow.
I've got the Buckeyes winning this thing. I think they have to be the favorite because of the overall body of that roster. It's so good. And I think if Will Howard can just come in there and be decent enough, I think they can win it. I think Penn State is the real sleeper. I do like your Nittany Lions. We got to hope Drew Aller gets a little bit better in year 2. I thought he was okay, but at times he really struggled last year against the bigger name opponents. So if he improves, I think they're going to be right in there. And I think Oregon is the other big one.
Yeah.
I mean, guys, they brought in a lot. And I'm telling you, I'm a big Oklahoma fan. Dylan Gabriel, his improvement from year 1 to year 2 at OU was tremendous. And I think he fits that perfect. I think Oregon's kind of the third team to look for that in the Big Ten.
Yeah, 10.5 there. even money if you think over on the Oregon Ducks here in 2024. One of our loyal guests here every single week, Aaron Halterman, joining us on Sharp Money, co-owner of RacingDudes.com. Check him out for all the daily horse bets as well. I'm so excited to go out to Del Mar in a few weeks, by the way, Aaron.
I'm
like counting down the days, man. Nice. I can't wait. Let's go.
Get your fedora or something. Something classier in there. Right?
Yeah, we'll figure it out. Anyway, always good to see you, Aaron. Thanks for stopping by.
All right, thanks, guys.
When we come back, final thoughts on this Thursday edition of Sharp Money. Wimbledon men's semi tomorrow. Some MLB action still to come. We'll break it all down right after this.